Who do you think would be better at Survivor, Donald Trump or Joe Biden?
Oh boy.
Would you rather cake or ice cream?
I guess ice cream.
Do you not like cake?
I like cake, but I guess I was just thinking there's more flavors of ice cream that I'm open to, whereas with cake, it's not. It's more limited there for me. I'm more of a
pizza.
Pizza.
That's easy. Yeah, that's pretty easy. Would you rather be rich or be beautiful?
I guess rich, because money fixes all problems, right?
What would you do, honestly, if you had $1 billion right now?
If I had $1 billion right now, you know, I don't think much would change about my life. You know, I would just put that money into something that I'm passionate about.
That's it. So, like, that, it wouldn't.
That's
because that's such an unconventional answer. You know that, right?
Right. No, I know. I, you know, it's not like not going to buy a big mansion or anything. I'm a very simple guy. I don't want for much. So, right now, I just think being able to go into an early retirement and just kind of put that money towards something that I am very passionate about would kind of be the route. Because, like I said, I there's not much that I need to make me happy.
Well, don't you think with that type of money, you can buy yourself as a contestant on Big Brother?
I don't think so, because Big Brother is kind of a physical competition, so I don't see them busting down my door any day soon, no matter how much money I have.
That is so fucked. I didn't even think about that, dude. Damn. Would you rather be stoned to death by pickles or drown in mayonnaise? Now, keep in mind, like, these aren't like hard pickles. Like, it's going to take a long time to get stoned to death by pickles. It's going to be like professional baseball pitchers chunking them at you.
I guess I'd go with the pickles because, drowning. I'm pretty picky, so I don't think I would like the taste of mayonnaise as I'm slowly dying.
Do you like pickles?
No.
Me neither. I think I would take the pickles. And here's my strategy, okay? I am hoping to get hit in the head and just knock me unconscious. It'll be quick, right? I don't want to have to, like, I'm gasping for air. And I'm like, no, what's that taste? Oh, mayonnaise. Right. Oh, and then I'm dead, right? That would be horrific.
Right.
Would you rather have a head the size of a tennis ball or the size of a watermelon?
what was the, sorry, tennis, say that it was tennis ball head,
a tennis ball head or a watermelon head?
Probably a watermelon head. Cause, it would be really weird. I would wonder like what your vision would be if your head was that small. I would imagine that you would either see things like much larger and up close or,
Do you think though, that if you did have a tennis ball head, you would be the most awesome Halloween guest because you could be like the headless walking guy? Isn't that a Halloween costume?
Oh, like the headless horseman.
Yes.
Yeah, that's very true. Very true.
Yeah. I guess the other thing too I would think about is with the watermelon head, do you get like 3 times the brain too? Because if that happens, then you're essentially solved, like you're curing cancer tomorrow.
Exactly.
That would be awesome. Would you rather get eaten by a great white shark or beaten to death by a gorilla? I'm sorry if these are dark. I'm sorry. It's just what I thought of.
I guess get eaten to death, because kind of like with the pickles, it'd be fast.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. Because one bite in the right spot, it's gone. Okay.
Right.
Would you rather be an extra in an Oscar-winning movie or the lead act in a box office bomb?
I guess I would be an extra. Then I can be like, hey, you can take all the credit for this thing that did really well, even though you have a small part in it. Whereas if you're the lead in a box office bomb, then you will get all the credit, but for making it suck.
That is a great point. Or if you bomb, you can just deflect, right? You can just be like, oh, the director sucks or something, right?
Right. Yep.
Yeah, just like, hey, it's not my fault. What are you talking about? I'm the lead actor. Like, for example, if, let's say, who's a big movie? A Tom Cruise movie. Say a Tom Cruise movie comes out and it bombs. Do we really think it's because of Tom Cruise?
No, not usually. I think most people, there's a lot of people that think he's never made a bad movie. So if he did come out with a bad movie, it would probably be on the director or screenwriter, anybody but him.
No. Yeah. Have you watched a lot of Tom Cruise movies?
Not a ton. I've seen Top Gun. I haven't seen the new one. I've seen a couple of the Mission Impossible movies. I saw Edge of Tomorrow, which is surprisingly really good. Yeah, and then I've seen parts of Cocktail, so not super into him, but like I said, he doesn't seem to make a bad movie, so good on him.
Who's your favorite movie star?
Oh boy, I can't say that I really have one, so I'm going to go with the unconventional answer and say Weird Al.
Yeah. That is awesome, man. Do you watch movies like whenever they first come out, or are you a big movie person?
I'm not like a huge movie person. You know, there will be a movie every once in a while that's like something that I've really been waiting for. So, you know, something that's based off of a book, or maybe something that, like I've seen the last couple of Scream movies, and I love those movies, so I had to seek them out as soon as they came out. But yeah, I need to watch more movies, because I find it kind of difficult to just sit and watch something just by myself. It has to be something that I have really been looking forward to.
Yeah, I agree. It is kind of hard. Like I think also because I don't watch that much like cable TV, I don't see the like the trailers and stuff like that. For example, if you had to ask me, hey, what's playing in a theater right now? I don't think I could name a single movie.
Yeah, I don't think I could do that either. I haven't really been following the trailers much.
Yeah. Do you watch you see that you got the new season of Survivor? Do you watch Survivor?
Yes, I do. I love Survivor, not as much as Big Brother, but I've in the last few years really gotten into Survivor, and it's been okay. We had kind of a bumpy start to the season, but something they've been doing the last couple of years is getting into 90-minute episodes, and so that really gives the show time to breathe, really lets you kind of get to know the players and the strategy better. So I've been enjoying it so far, and I'm interested to kind of see where the season ends up.
Yeah, same here. I've probably watched maybe 4 seasons of Survivor, and I just started watching the new season yesterday. In fact, I'm like through the first episode, but that's it. I kind of let them build up. Yeah, don't spoil it for me.
No, I won't. I won't.
So far, my favorite guy is the Harvard guy, the Harvard Taylor Swift guy.
Oh, yeah, Charlie.
Yeah. I feel like he's either going to be gone really soon or he's going to go really far.
Yeah, I've liked what I've seen from him so far. I think it's always hard to predict who's going to win on these shows on any given season, because it's like sometimes the nerdy guy does really well. Other times you have the challenge beast that ends up doing really well because they start picking off those nerdy people. So I could kind of see it going either way for Charlie. Right now, I think he's in a place where he can make a good run of it.
Yeah, you know what I noticed too? I feel like at the beginning of the season, specifically before the merge of every season, it feels like the women always team up and they're always successful. It always seems like, you know, everyone's mingling, hey. But it always seems like at the end or at the beginning of the show, but come tribunal time, the women always stick together, man, and the men fall for it every time.
Yeah, I would push back a little bit because I kind of feel like they don't have the they typically don't do very good when they band together, because they always, any time that a women's alliance starts to form, they always try to get all of the women together. And so what that does is create a situation where there's a lot more infighting because you have all these different personalities that are clashing. Because when you have a when you have something like a guys alliance, the guys, a group of them will stick together, but it's not like they're inviting everyone into the pack. So there's a lot less of that infighting that goes on. And so typically then if you have a bunch of challenge beast guys, I do see them usually being able to, you know, make a deep run more often than not. Even though I will admit in the last few seasons, this new era of Survivor, we definitely have had a lot more women winners that have been able to do really well because they stick together. So, who knows?
What would, if you went on Survivor, right? And you were able to compete and whatnot,
right.
or let's say maybe if you built the perfect Survivor contestant, like what does that look like? And what do you think is the best strategy going in to win?
So I think in this new era of Survivor, because they're down to 26 days now, so it goes by really, really fast. I think it's just a matter of finding, making enough connections with people, you know, and making sure you're liked, but making sure that you're a number that people can count on, but they don't feel like you're that threatening, like as a social player or anything, because then I feel like you can kind of hide in the pack until you get to the merge. And then from there, you can use all of these relationships that you've built up and, you know, start to make a deeper run into the game.
Yeah, I always feel like maybe the best strategy, especially at the beginning, is to kind of lay low a little bit. And whatever I say by laying low is you still want to play the game. You still want to go talk to people, you know, be, you know, active, but you, I feel like sometimes people put a target on their back by being such a big personality.
Yep.
And it's like, I'm always, whenever I see someone coming in and they're like, oh yeah, I'm the loud, brash guy and I don't want to help around camp and stuff. I'm like, do you even watch the show at all? I get so frustrated.
Yeah. Yeah. You see this happen every season because it's like, and I think Jeff said it in the first episode of the season, is that there are people that no matter what are going to have no chance. They aren't going to win. They aren't going to be liked. They're not going to be respected, or they're, you know, going to find themselves out of the game very early on. And it's so interesting to me how people fall into those archetypes no matter what the season is. You know, I think that these players, you know, because you're on Survivor, so you want to play, you want to do all of the things. But if you want to win Survivor, you have to be able to take a step back and kind of, you know, let your tribe eat their own and kind of be in the background just watching it all happen. I always say in Big Brother that the best winners of Big Brother are the people that if there's like a big fight that's going on, they're the people on the outskirts just watching it that you're able to like bond and laugh with and be like, oh my God, can you believe this is happening? Like, those are the people that you gravitate toward because they're not getting in on the drama. And so I find that if you want to be good at these types of games, that's kind of what you have to do. You just have to be very level-headed and really be aware of what it is you're doing at every moment in the game.
Yeah, and that's hard too. It is, because I could understand, like, maybe put myself in the shoes of someone on there, and it's like, okay, it's hard to not be yourself for 26 days.
Right.
But you kind of want to, you don't want to slip up, right? You don't want to. And another phenomenon I see is that it seems like come vote time, it's almost like random, I feel like, because they just start talking and then someone throws out a name, Bob. Like, hey, yeah, Bob, I seen Bob. He was over there looking for coconuts and he didn't bring any back to camp. And then bam. And I think everybody, it seems like they jump on the ship just because it's like, hey, Bob isn't me. So as long as he goes and not me, then that is okay. So do you think a strategy would be, hey, just start throwing out names, right? And see what sticks. And as long as it's not your name, you're in the green.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I don't know if you know who Sandra is, but that was her strategy to a T. Anybody but me, it doesn't matter. And I think as long as you're, like I said, being aware of what your position in the game is, that strategy can be fine, because, you know, you also have to keep in mind that it's like a chess game, right? So you have all these different pieces and they have to go at the right time. So you still have to be aware that, like, it's not always good to just jump on the bandwagon because you don't want it to be your name. Sometimes you have to play more actively. But I think in Sandra's case, like, she's been able to do that to a T, where she has been able to jump on that bandwagon and her name never comes up. And then she gets to the end and it's kind of wild that she's done that two times in a row. So,
yeah. And if you watch her, she has this weird way of, I want to say it's like a womanly way of just kind of like, when she talks, you're kind of like, yeah, you're right. Like, we should vote Bob off. Like, you kind of make a good point. And she, she always seems genuine when she talks. Like she, it seems like she really believes it. Like this is, this person should go. And so I think that is a great strategy. I don't know if I can name a winner who came out the gates and was a big, brash, like kind of like bold person. Can you think of one?
I can. Yeah. Tony Vlachos. Yeah, he came in to Survivor Kageon, which was the 20th season. And he was, he's the guy that people oftentimes call him the Survivor Unicorn, because he did that very brash kind of gameplay where he just came hot out of the gates. And there's just something about him that is so magnetic that even though he's doing all of this stuff in full force, he was able to win the game. And it was incredible, incredible to watch.
That is awesome. I wonder, do you think that, like, how do you manage that too? Because I feel like even if people like you, then they still kind of play with their head. Because some people, it's like they will play with their heart. It's like, oh, I don't want to vote him out. He's a nice guy. Right. And some people will just play with their head and say, I don't care. So it is crazy to hear him coming in being brash and kicking ass the whole season.
Yeah, I mean, he was a nice guy. I don't mean like he came in like this big jerk. You know, I'm hot shit and all of that. But I think what helped him, and I think what would help someone in a similar position, is that you have to have somebody that you trust in the game that can kind of clean up your messes for you, that can kind of round out the edges of your game, so that if you're doing a little bit too much, they can either help you pull back a little bit, or they can do damage control for you.
Yeah, that's a great point too. If you could make like that strong alliance at the beginning. And you know what's so funny? People would try to make alliances about anything. They're like, yeah, bruh, our favorite color is blue. We got to be in an alliance. You know what I'm saying? It's like right. Just anything. And then like that same person will turn around and be like, hey, yeah, girl, our favorite color is red. We got to make an alliance. It's just like they're so desperate, man. I couldn't imagine what that feels like.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I don't remember if this was in the first episode. It's not a huge spoiler or anything, but there's these two guys that were bonding over the Andy Griffith show, and like they made an alliance based off of the fact that they had this common interest. And so, yeah, I think right out of the gate, you're looking for those small little things, because in our daily life, that's how we connect with people, right? Our common interests, and that's kind of where you start, and then you're able to build something bigger. So, but I do find it funny watching the show and seeing people like make an alliance very early on and being like, you're my day one, you're my ride or die. And then a few episodes later, they're like, oh, actually, you know what? I think I gotta vote you out. It's very funny to, because that's another thing that you see happen so commonly, and it's so funny when it happens, because that's just people playing the game. That's just kind of people falling into these same pitfalls that you see every season.
Doesn't it seem like the winner is luck because of stuff like that, what you're saying? It seems like it's almost no way for you not to get double-crossed or something. Someone could double-cross you because they had a dream or something like that. So doesn't it feel like the winner is just ultimately the luckiest person?
I would agree with that. There's a fair bit of luck. Like going back to Sandra, the initial, I believe her tribe. Yeah, it was her tribe that was the first to go to tribal council in her first season, and the vote was going to be on her. Like, she was the one that was going to go home, and I forget what happened, but somebody else ended up leaving, so either she was able to get the name on somebody else, or there was a medevac or something. But it's crazy to think that this two-time winner might not have been that had things not kind of happened the way that they did.
Who do you think would be better at Survivor? Donald Trump or Joe
Oh boy.
Biden?
I think I think
It's actually a tough question, right? It is kind of tough.
yeah, it is tough. Here's the thing. I don't think either of them even if they had all of the other qualities, I don't think either of them could win. But if I had to choose one, yeah, I guess I would have to go with Biden, because with Trump, like, people are just gonna laugh him off and drag him to the end, you know. Whereas with Biden, there's many winners of Survivor that win just because they aren't this other person that they're sitting next to. So I think Biden would fill that spot pretty well.
I think Biden actually has a personality that maybe could win Survivor, because he is kind of like, hey, I'm just go with the flow. Well, he's older now too. I don't know what he's like when he's younger, but he's just like, hey, I'm just here, I'm go with the flow, but you give me my chance to talk and I'm gonna make my point and then I'm gonna shut up, right? I'm gonna lay back here. But on the flip side, like Donald Trump's either getting voted off first or he's winning, guaranteed. I couldn't imagine. Hello, yes, these are the best coconuts ever.
Right.
I pick
Yeah.
all of the coconuts. It's like, Donald, dude, you haven't picked a single coconut. Like, he's a pathological liar too, which is really bad.
Right. I you know, and I could see a similar situation where he wins just based on who he's sitting next to, because, you know, if people hate you enough, they'll vote for the other guy. And so I think they're both spite winners. But yeah, you make a compelling case.
That is a good point. You actually just made a great point, which is whenever there's obviously somebody who's a dick bag and just fucking terrible, they'll say, yeah, Rodney, listen, let's just save Rodney. He's not gonna make it to the end. So let's vote off Susan now, but like we'll save Rodney because like he's kind of good at challenges, right? So that is a viable tactic to be so annoying that people are just like, yeah, there's no way you're gonna win this game.
Yeah, and that is a common strategy. Typically, those players are called goats because they're the scapegoat. They're the person that you can drag to the end, and they're going to get 0 votes because nobody respects the game or the way they played it, or they feel like they didn't play it at all. You know, obviously a great example of that is Russell Hantz, from Survivor Samoa and Survivor Heroes versus Villains. He is that brash player. He is that player that's a dick bag and nobody likes. And he's very good at the strategic end of Survivor, so he's always able to set up the pieces so that he's able to get to the end. But a large part of why he's never in danger of going out before then is because people know they're going to be able to beat him in the end. And so and you see that so much in Big Brother too, that You know, it's a valid strategy. It's not the most entertaining finale situation to watch, but it's a valid strategy.
What's your favorite thing about Big Brother? Because I see you seem to like it, and I've only watched like two episodes. It's like, what is it about it that you like?
Yeah, so the thing about Big Brother that kind of sets it apart from any reality television program is that it is a 24/7 show that you can watch. You know, the on Survivor, what you're getting is the edited version of the show. So they shoot the show a year in advance, they edit it, they know the ending before it's released. And so when you watch it, you're getting the producer's version of what happened on that season. Whereas with Big Brother, there are hundreds of cameras and microphones in the Big Brother house. So you're getting a live video feed from the house virtually 24/7. So you get to watch every single second of the game and the strategy that's going on. And so you can follow a really great player for weeks on end and see as they're slowly starting to gain power or take it away from somebody. And then, of course, you have the produced show, which definitely is corny and is definitely edited in a way that aligns with how the producers feel about the different players in the house and is more aligned for the casual viewers. But if you're a hardcore fan of Big Brother, like you get a feast for 3 months. Like it's insane how much time you can spend watching the live feeds. There are people that have podcasts where they dissect the strategy day after day, and it's just a really cool community experience that you don't really get with Survivor.
Or any show. I did not know about the live feed. Where is the Big Brother live feed? Is it on like YouTube or something?
It's on the Paramount Plus website. So you buy Paramount Plus, you know, you buy a subscription, and then you get access to the Big Brother live feeds, which are on the Big Brother homepage on the Paramount website.
That's interesting. I did not know that. That does make it extremely unique. What is like the main objective of Big Brother? Like, how do you win?
Yeah, so it's similar to Survivor. You basically have the season start with 16 house guests moving into the Big Brother house, and each week they fight or they compete for power and for safety. And so the week always starts off with a competition called the Head of Household competition, and whoever wins that has the power to nominate two players for eviction. And so then from that point, you have these two players that get nominated that are able to compete along with the head of household and three other players in a competition that's very much like the immunity challenges of Survivor. And so whoever wins that challenge has the opportunity to either take one of the nominees off the block or keep the nominations the same. So that means that the nominees have the opportunity to potentially save themselves. And then, depending on who's on the chopping block at the end of the week, there's a house vote where the house will, of course, vote for one of the players to leave. And you just keep repeating this cycle. It gets a little bit different in the structure of the game once we get down to the final four, but that's the basic structure of the entire game. And then it goes down to a final two that, similar to Survivor, you have two players that are going up in front of the jury, which is their evicted house guests, and having to make their case for why they should win the game.
And I'm guessing the house vote is where like the politicking comes in. It's where a lot of gamesmanship occurs.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, and there's a lot of downtime on Big Brother. So typically, the head of household competition takes place on a Thursday night, and then the head of household will have basically all of Thursday night into Friday to kind of have their meetings with people to kind of decide what it is that they want to do. And then Friday night, you have the nomination ceremony where the two house guests get nominated for eviction. And then the following day, that Saturday, they have the power of veto competition, which is the immunity challenge. And so there's all of this in between time. Like the whole week plays out over a week, in contrast to Survivor, where it's a 3-day cycle. So you have a lot of time for this politicking to happen.
Wait, on the live feeds, can you see them like undressing and stuff? Do you see a little like nudity?
You can see nudity, yes.
Oh shit.
The house guests are pretty good at this point about being able to hide it. Like even when they take a shower, the showers are made so that you're not seeing them buck naked when they're in the shower. You're not getting too much of a show. But yes, some nudity does occur on the show.
All right. Well, Noah, today we learned why you love Big Brother.
Yeah, it's for the strategy. I'd just like to make that clear.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Right.
That is crazy. I did not know this because this is why you're explaining exactly why I only watched two episodes because I watched the produced episode. And like you said, it did come off as like really corny and silly, but it kind of didn't hit me. I'm like, I know this is one of the most popular shows in history, but this is so hard to watch for me.
Yeah, you can, with Big Brother, you do have to give it some grace because it's not like Survivor where they're on an island and you're watching people starve. Like they're in a house, they've got all of their luxuries that they have in the outside world, except for, television or the internet. So there's not a ton. There are a lot of segments on the show that are stupid just because they don't have too much to show. That being said, if you can get past the corniness, the strategy segments are usually really interesting. And like I said, if you're following it online, you're getting some extra details, but I can see how watching previous seasons without the live feeds wouldn't be as fun.
Yeah, I actually met a woman who was a contestant on Big Brother. This was a long time ago, man. This was probably 10 years ago
Okay.
ish. 8 to 10 years ago. Anyways, I was at a gas station. My car was broke down. No, it was not broke down. My keys were locked inside. I pump gas, go to get in. The keys are locked inside. And so I have this clothes hanger and I'm trying to jimmy my lock. And this girl, I think she was blonde, she just comes up. She's like, hey, yeah. She's very like, and this is Southern Louisiana. So I'm guessing she's from Louisiana. She's like, hey, look, I could do it here. Give it to me. I'm like, who the hell are you? And she's like, no, I was on Big Brother. Trust me, I could do it. And I'm like, what? And I think she told me her name, but I forgot. But I was just like, who is this girl? She's trying to jimmy the lock and stuff. And like, she hung out with us for like 15 minutes. And I think that was my introduction to Big Brother, was a contestant, Jimmy in my lock on the car. It was crazy.
That's pretty interesting. I wish I had like an encyclopedic knowledge of these players outside of the show, because I couldn't tell you where any of these players are from. But that's very, very interesting.
I know. Would you say that like Big Brother is your favorite hobby?
I would say so. Yeah. It pretty much takes up a good chunk of my time in the summer. I have friends that I watch it with, and so that's pretty much all we're talking about for that 3 month period. And so, yeah, it's just, like I said, it is a community experience unlike any other. I don't think that Big Brother gets the amount of love that Survivor does. It doesn't get the amount of love that I think it deserves, even though I will say, like, the highs of Big Brother are great, but the lows are very, very low. And so it can be very, very hard to enjoy a full season of Big Brother.
Well, it's pretty obvious why they don't get the hype of Survivor. It's because they don't have Jeff. Oh my gosh. He's the best host in the history of like TV shows, right? I love Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff is very, very good.
Like how sometimes he'll just like make up his own rules or something, or he'll be like someone will like kind of cheat or like use a weird strategy and just like, no, play on. You can do it. Like, I'm like, well, Jeff, you just made up a rule. And like, he just shoots from the hip. I love watching that guy.
Yeah, like Sabaya with the immunity, the wax immunity idol that she brought to Tribal last season. I think Jeff, he sees Survivor as a labor of love. I don't always agree with the decisions that he makes with the game and the way that it goes. But yeah, he definitely treats it like a labor of love, whereas our host of Big Brother, Julie Chen, she just treats it like a job. She's only there once a week. Her heart's really, really not in it. And that can be pretty disappointing because then, yeah, we're not getting the, if she's not excited, then it's hard for us to get excited.
Yeah, that's a great point. If you could change one thing about Big Brother, what would it be?
I would remove all of the dumb twists. And I would say the same for Survivor, because I'm a purist when it comes to those games. So I like I like it when these shows just trust the cast that they have, you know, and they just are like, all right, we're letting you loose. Go play the game. Because I feel like I feel like the most interesting twist in a season of Big Brother is the different choices that people are making, you know? And when you put in some game-breaking production-centered twist into the game, I just feel like that doesn't give the players the room to maneuver, and then it just ends up making things stale.
Yes, I totally agree. And I think I feel like it's a common mistake on a lot of game shows or those type of shows. It almost feels like overproduced, even sometimes in the way I'm talking about Survivor, in the way that they present it. I really want, like, I wish they focused more on the gamesmanship, the manipulation that's going on and stuff like that. But sometimes I feel like they can overthink it.
Absolutely. I mean, people Okay, I don't want to say that because I don't want to spoil the season. So I'll say something more general is that, a lot of times you'll have this situation where it's like, okay, this person doesn't have a vote. This person has two votes. This person can steal a vote. And you just have to keep track of all of these different pieces that it doesn't even make watching the show fun because you get confused in the details. Whereas it's more fun if things are just kind of laid out in a more simple way.
Totally agree. And if there were twists, what I would personally like is a twist like this. It's like, hey, like Jeff comes out or something like that. And it's like, hey, we're going to play tic-tac-toe or whatever. And you get to choose to listen in on the conversations of two of your contestants, right? Any two, because they're wearing mics. So, like something like that, like, hey, they were talking in the woods, we'll play it for you. Like something like that that kind of exposes something. Because I feel like if we did something like that, then the fallout would be incredible. Especially if, let's say that we're on an alliance, right? We're the cool guy alliance. And then like I hear that you're talking with Samantha in the jungle about double crossing me. I think that that would make for beautiful TV.
I see what you're saying. I kind of that's another problem that I have with twists is that I feel like if people are scared to play the game, then they'll pull back, which kind of makes the strategy more safe. But I mean, I do think twists that kind of are more social in nature, are more in line with what the core of the game is, would be something that survivors should employ. I don't know. I feel like they haven't, they throw everything at the wall, and I don't know that they found the thing that sticks. I think like hidden immunity idols, those were something that were only introduced. I think it was season 11. And I think that was a great game
Yes.
mechanic because like, okay, if your tribe loses and you know that there's going to be one specific person that everybody wants to get out, but then that person finds a hidden immunity idol. I love that that kind of shakes things up. So I think small little things like that are really what production of these types of shows should be doing. But like I said, I don't think they understand why the things that work actually work, so they haven't been able to replicate them.
I know I would, you made such a good point. The immunity idol is the ultimate because it never feels like it's too overpowered or it's unfair. It always kind of also kind of plays into this aspect of luck since everything's, kind of about luck that, hey, if you are on the bottom and you are kind of getting screwed, you have like this final lifeline. Has there ever been a twist or an addition to Survivor that's been as good as the idol?
I can't say that I've watched it long enough to be able to do that. I do think that there was I forget the name of the twist. It was in the winner's season that Survivor did a few seasons ago where there was a player that had to get coins. Like all of the players had a certain number of tokens. I think it was their fire tokens that, because Jeff was trying to create like a survivor economy. And so they all had these tokens and they could exchange them between their different tribe mates for different things. And so in order to, I think, keep his vote, there was a player that had to go around and acquire a certain number of tokens from people. And I think that was a great twist because it made him have to exhibit the social skills that you need for Survivor. So it was kind of working that muscle. And I remember that episode being really fun to watch. Like, they centered the entire episode around this guy trying to get these tokens. And it, like I said, it was a lot of fun to watch because it was kind of at the core of what Survivor is all about.
I think we are best friends, Noah. I'm so glad you said that because I'm definitely gonna go watch that season. That is an awesome twist. I love that. That's the thing about Survivor, and I'm sure Big Brother and a lot of these shows. It's like there's like 40 seasons, man. There's a lot of like cool nuggets and moments in there that people don't pick up on. That is an awesome twist. Thank you so much. Could you tell me about like what like your day-to-day life, like as far as like how you live, right? You're in a wheelchair. Could you first start off with like what puts you in the wheelchair? Like what's going on?
Yeah. So I was born with a spinal cord disorder called spina bifida. So basically it's a disability where basically within the first few months of pregnancy, the spine starts to develop, but it doesn't close. And so what happens is the spine is exposed, and in some cases, because the spine is exposed, it can get exposed to amniotic fluid, which ends up killing the nerves like around the spine. And what that basically does is it jacks up a lot of things. And so I am paralyzed from the waist down. Like you said, I use a manual wheelchair.
Are you jacked? You must be so strong, dude.
I'm not. No.
Oh, okay.
No, I am not. No, this is what I'm working with.
Jacked, man.
Yeah. So there's different levels of spina bifida. Because so basically what happens is once I was born with this like big gaping hole in my back. And my spine was protruding, you know, outside of my body, essentially. And depending on how big the hole is, depending on where it's located on the body, there's different, different levels of paralysis, different levels of things that can happen. There are people that have spina bifida that are able to walk, but maybe they just have back pain. So there's different kind of things that go along with that. My day-to-day life is fairly normal. It's just there's a lot of physical limitations that I have. There's a lot of assistance that I need in my daily life. Which admittedly can complicate has complicated my ability to kind of be more independent. So
do you have like someone there kind of helping you out?
Yeah, I live with my parents currently. And so one day the hope is to be able to live on my own and be fully independent. Not quite there yet, but that is the hope. It is obviously difficult, but like I said, my life is fairly normal, just like anybody else's, just with a unique set of challenges.
Yeah. Are you able to like work and do stuff like that?
I am. Yeah. I am right now looking for remote work. I graduated in 2018 with a bachelor's in communications. And so I had started looking for work in 2019. And wasn't really finding anything. And then the pandemic hit. And so basically my entire working life, I've worked remotely, which has definitely been something that's been very positive, because then I'm working within my space and there's a lot of things that I'm not having to figure out how I'm going to make work in a office space.
Of course. Were you homeschooled or did you go to public school?
Oh no, I went to public school. Yeah, I had a normal childhood.
What was public school like? That had to have been brutal, man. Kids are assholes.
It wasn't really like that for me. I have had the suspicion that I had it really easy in that department. So maybe the adults in my life were just protecting me from things. And maybe I was just oblivious to people saying things behind my back. But it was a relatively positive experience. I had friends. I had a social life, I was still a very introverted kid, but I was able to make friends. And the academics were very definitely something that I was able to handle. And I had a great support system that was helping me all throughout my elementary through high school career. So I'm very, very lucky.
Yeah, man, you are. And that is awesome that we do have one out of a million schools in America that wouldn't be a fucking asshole, man, because kids are such jerks. It's crazy. What would you say is kind of your biggest day-to-day challenge? Like, what's the toughest part?
I do still think the looking for work is something that is a big challenge. Remote work is great and it's something that's increased since the pandemic started, but it is a situation where, people want employees back in the office. So looking for those jobs that are still offering work from home is kind of difficult. It's very difficult even when I am applying somewhere that's outside of the home to kind of consider how I am going to manage working in an office space, but also even applying as a disabled person, because the minute you say you're disabled, then people are having all of these preconceived notions about what it is you're capable of. And in a lot of instances, your application just gets thrown in the trash.
You're talking about that checkbox, right? Oh man, I'm pretty sure it's like illegal or something to ask someone if they're disabled. So they put like an optional checkbox, right? And it's the same thing, I think, with like race and religion too. And yep. Maybe correct me if I'm wrong. It's like, hey, you don't have to answer this, but if you don't answer it, you go straight to the trash. And maybe for you, if you do answer it, you go to the trash. Man, that's so fucked, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something that I'm seeing more and more is, so usually, well, I won't get into what I do.
Just lie on the application, dude. You can do it. Yeah,
but it's such a hard thing because you don't want to disclose your disability before you even have the chance for an interview. But at the same time, you don't want to say, I choose not to answer because that's almost a confession. And if you say, well, no, I don't have a disability, well, that's lying. So there's just so many different things that you have to think about. And I have heard that technically it's legal because it's not about the hiring process. It's about demographics for the federal government. So they're not using it for the hiring process, but I'm like, somebody is definitely looking at it, so they know what you're answering. So who knows?
Yeah, I just want to, Noah, as a guy who did a lot of fucking lying in his life, I lied. Listen, I lied my whole damn, all the way up till I was like 24. That's all I did was lie. You ask me what color the sky is, I'd say purple. Listen, there's a difference between lying and a mistake. It said, hey, I'm sorry that my hand slipped when I clicked the button. I'm so sorry. But by the way, if you hire me, I will do a great job. It's come on, like sometimes because the cards are stacked against you, dude. So sometimes you may have to do a little bit of cheating.
I hear you. Yeah, it's like I said, it's one of those things that's really messy, and makes the whole process so much more bleak because you're like, all right, I just spent an hour on this cover letter, and now is it even gonna matter? Able-bodied people. Everyone goes through the rat race of having to apply for jobs and wondering if it's even gonna matter. But having that added weight, just makes that feeling 10 times worse.
Dude, my heart honestly does break for this type of shit. I hate this fucking type of shit. How do you mentally, emotionally approach your disability? Are you bitter? Do you think about it often?
Yeah. The way that you do that is you go to therapy. But no, I mean, here's the thing. If, I am not, there are days that I'm bitter. There are days where, I think in the disability community, there's this idea of disability pride, right? You want to be prideful in who you are because other people will tell you that you're insignificant, right? That you're not good enough. So I think for a lot of disabled people, there's this need to always be positive about their situation, because you don't want to be adding. Like, you don't want to be telling the people that think you're insignificant that they're right. And I don't think they're right, but even still, I have moments where, yeah, you just have to kind of accept that things suck sometimes. And, you have to kind of wallow and kind of mourn this idea that things could be different. But at the same time, like, it's not healthy to let yourself go completely down there. So it's very difficult. And I think that's why I just focus on all of the things that are good in my life, all of the, that's why I pour my attention into something like Big Brother or listening to Weird Al. Is because, there's a lot of great stuff in this world, and you never want to lose sight of that. And I think being able to focus on all of the good that you have in your life definitely can help kind of pull you out of those places, those moments where maybe you're not feeling as great about yourself as you'd like to.
How many days out of 10 would you say are bad days where you just kind of feel shitty, like, man, I wish stuff was different?
I I don't know. You know, it's not like I am just down in the dumps every day. You know, it's just moments here and there. And some weeks, those moments are greater. And other weeks, I'm totally fine, and my energy is put into places that are more positive for me to be putting my energy into. So really it just depends.
Yeah, I really hate to hear kind of what you said earlier about kind of how people can view you and the disability community. Because I'll just be honest, whenever I see someone who's disabled in almost any type of way, almost any type of way, like if I've seen you in Walmart or whatever, you and all the entire community serve as an inspiration to me. Because first of all, I see you and I'm like, holy fuck. Like, because I'm over here tripping on my bullshit, right? Like, oh, I stubbed my toe or something like that. But this person has to overcome so much more than me every single fucking day. You can't escape it. There's nothing you can do about it every single day just to live. And so it really kind of reminds me, A, to check my bullshit at the door. And probably the second feeling I have is one of curiosity. I'm like, I would really like to talk to this person, but I don't want to make them feel, I don't want to make you feel odd or something like that. And I don't want to talk to you, be like, hey, yo, what's it like? I just want to be like, what's your name? Hello. Like, you want to like hang out or something like that? Because I just think that you live such a different life and that really intrigues me. But to hear that anybody would say, oh, look at these people wallowing or something like that, I think that's a sick fucker.
Yeah, so I'm gonna push back a little bit because I think it's good, good to educate people. So there's this idea, that there's this thing in the disability community called inspiration porn, and the name is deceiving. It is not as dirty as it sounds. But basically it's this idea that able-bodied people have kind of a tendency to objectify disabled people for their own gain. So for example, like if you've ever been to a doctor's office and you've seen a poster of a disabled person like doing some incredible physical feat and there's a caption at the bottom that says something like, "What's your excuse?" or "The only disability is a bad attitude." That is meant, like you said, to inspire able-bodied people to kind of check themselves and kind of consider that their problems are small beans, right? But the thing is, that is a very like reductive view to me of what it means to be a human. So like, yeah, maybe you've got your own bullshit that you're dealing with, and maybe you see someone that, has obvious physical limitations and you're thinking to yourself, oh, they have it so much worse than me. Like I need to check myself. I need to let go of whatever bullshit I'm hanging on to. I kind of reject that because everybody has something. They have their things that they're going through, and they don't need to, play the oppression Olympics, right? They don't need to be comparing their struggles to somebody else's. Because, it just people's lives are way too complicated to say that one person doesn't have the right to, cry because they broke up with a significant other or, they lost their house or whatever. Like it's just it's not worth it to compare yourself to other people. And I find also that, you know, people are very quick to put disabled people on a pedestal when we're doing something that they don't expect us to be able to do. But like, if I was going around wallowing about my situation, people would be very quick to also look at me and tell me to toughen up or to tell me that I'm not trying hard enough, because then they would be comparing me to other disabled people that, you know, have achieved these great things. So yeah, like going back to what I said, just humans are too complex for us to be playing the comparison game. It doesn't do anyone any good.
So are you saying that, like, by me kind of, are you saying that maybe I would be using you as an object to make me feel better by comparison? Is that what you're saying? And that's kind of not cool?
Yeah, essentially. You know, you're, because you're only seeing, you're seeing this grandiose version of this person. You know, you're not seeing them on their bad days. So you're only seeing the positive. You're only saying, oh, they've overcome something, you know, when the reality is they're still overcoming it every day. And some days are harder than others. You know, I'm, like I said, I am not always happy about myself. I'm some days, you know, kind of down in the dumps. And that, when I am down in the dumps, that would not be a very inspiring display to see. But people only have these very narrow views. That again, yeah, they're using to like motivate themselves. They're using it for their own benefit. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. I kind of do that with almost anybody that I see that maybe I may be better off at a certain thing. For example, if like I see someone with like really crappy shoes on, I'm like, shit, I'm so glad to have good shoes. If I see like, you know, I see the homeless people and my heart fucking breaks, this type of shit. So what, like, what type of way do you think disabled people should be perceived by folks like me?
Honestly, it's just as human beings. People want to complicate it so much when they see us, that it's just like, we are human beings just like you are. So it's like, talk to us like we're human beings. Don't talk to us like we're some angelic figure. Talk to us like we are this three-dimensional human being that is just trying to get through life just like you are. You know, it's not something that you have to lose sleep over trying to figure out how to approach a disabled person. Just do it like you would anyone else. I would caution, like, don't go up to someone and ask them what happened to them.
Oh shit. Oh no.
Don't do that. Because like in this type of scenario, that's okay. This is, you know, yeah, a podcast. This is an interview. It's a conversation that is tailored to asking those types of questions. But like, because like me, I was born this way, but there's tons of us in the disability community that weren't born this way. And, you know, probably had a very traumatic experience in the process of becoming disabled, that if you're going up to them saying, hey, what happened to you? It's very likely that they're still dealing with that trauma. And so you don't want to be bringing bad things up for them. And also, like, you would be offended if someone went up to you and started asking you about your medical history. It's just not something that we do in polite society.
That's a great point. I think a lot of people are intimidated by disabled people, myself included. It's like you don't know how to approach it. Like you said, do you just treat them like a normal person? Do you like kind of put on the kids' gloves and, you know, kind of tiptoe around stuff? I think there are certain groups of people that, because they come off as intimidating for some reason or another, they become misunderstood. And I think that for me personally, I think disabled people are one of those groups for me. I think another one is like trans people. People are terrified of trans people, don't want to talk to them. And so that's why I guess I'm just thankful that you would take the time to talk to me and let me ask all my silly questions.
Yeah, people are scared by what they don't understand. And I think that the pursuit of knowledge is something that we could all kind of stand to be in pursuit of, because that's the way you connect with people is not being afraid to go up to someone and start talking to them. It's something I could be better about. I definitely could be better about.
Yeah, dude, you're inspiring me to just go kind of break down these walls and just go talk to these people. If you had if you were able bodied for a day, you can walk and run and all of this stuff, what do you think you would do?
Oh boy. I don't know.
Like, what would be the first thing? Like, what's the most important thing that you'd be most excited to do?
I don't. Okay, this is gonna be random. But I would go to Philadelphia and run up the Rocky Steps. There. I have never thought about it before, but that seems like something that would be cool to do. And so I'm giving you another unconventional answer there.
That's awesome. No, that's probably the best answer. Have you ever had like rude encounters in public where people were assholes to you?
Rude encounters. I mean, yeah, mostly growing up, it was like little kids because they're unfiltered, So a lot of times they'll be the ones asking me like, what happened to you? I've had these two old women pray for me in the middle of a department store. And so that was really weird. Luckily, nothing too untoward has happened in a while, so I'm very lucky. And my luck will probably run out now that I've said that.
No, do not. Listen, you should carry around like some pepper spray and just psst, just blast their ass, man. You don't think you would do that?
No, I'm not very much of a confrontational person, so I just try to get out of any kind of situation like that as soon as I can.
Yeah, that probably wouldn't end well, man. That probably wouldn't end well. But people shouldn't be assholes. Noah, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you so much for talking to me, taking the time. I think this was more of like an educational podcast because I learned so much about Big Brother. I got to peek behind your mind. You should be the producer of a game show. I think that's your calling. And I got to ask some questions that I've been dying to ask, a disabled person for probably over 20 years. So I genuinely appreciate your time. I think I'll walk away better because of this podcast. Do you want to let people know where they could find you?
Yeah, so you can find me at Noam Say on Twitter. That is MUSSAY. And then I do have a YouTube channel called The Entertainment Zone, spelled exactly as you would think it is spelled. And I typically talk about Big Brother on there. I started it up at the end of last season, so I have some videos talking about last season of Big Brother. And then I love Doctor Who, so I have some videos up about the 60th anniversary specials. I'm looking at uploading some reviews of the classic Doctor Who series, but I haven't got around to doing that yet. So hopefully by the time this is out, I have done that. If not, give those other videos some views.
Sounds good. We'll do. I'll put all that in the show notes. Once again, Noah, you're awesome. Thank you for coming on, dude.
Thank you.